WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Hope everyone is setting a dial out there at AM 1570 for us in Podcast Landia. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour all over the summer, June, July, August, leading up to our 25th anniversary, August 3rd, and then we'll be doing some oysters after that. All of it presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We have these instant lottery scratch-offs. We had some winners last week up at the local in Falston, and our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION, making me better in the summertime, energy-wise, than I was this time last year when I didn't have windows. This guy came into my life in the last two decades, but was in my life as a very young man. I want to say a child, but I don't want to date him too much. But I read his work many, many times in all sorts of places, in and around the Yankees and in and around the American League East. He spent plenty of time at Memorial Stadium back in the day. A longtime baseball man, and now doing his thing at Sportico. You can follow him out on the Twitter thing at Boomski. He's west coasting out there where the Orioles get to win games before the sun even sets. We welcome Barry Bloom back onto the program, one of our defending baseball champions. You know, Barry, I was going to hit you in March for spring training and say, nah, you know, then it's April and we had all the Lamar Jackson stuff here and the team got off to a good start. I'm like, yeah, you know, we're all watching more baseball. I had no idea I was going to find you Memorial Day and the Orioles are going to be like the greatest story in baseball so far this year.
Yeah, they're kind of like the polar opposite of the A's at this point, you know, considering where the situation is in the game. The Orioles are a great start.
Well, these are always uncomfortable situations when these teams move, right? Like the Orioles still very, very much and Baltimore feel the effect of the Montreal Expos demise, that they circled the drain for so long. They were going to San Juan and playing games in all these places. This Oakland situation, and we don't have a lease here, Barry. I want to continue down those lines that the owner does not have a lease here. Watching what's happened here, you've covered the sport your whole life. I'm assuming you weren't there when the Senators left Washington, right? I mean, like, you've covered this your whole life and contraction, all of these things that have happened. Other than the Montreal situation, they don't move baseball teams.
No, I mean, this is my 48th season covering baseball, believe it or not. And I started in the Bay Area. So it seems like between the Giants and the A's, my entire career has basically been around their stadium situations. Obviously, the Giants, you know, were finally settled after 20 years in 2000, and the A's are still ongoing. So it just seems like my entire career has been filled with their problems on where to build, how to build, who's going to pay for it. No, I was not around. I was still in college when the Senators moved to Texas, but you know, I was knee deep in the Montreal Expo move down from Montreal to Washington and the building of the new stadium down on the Navy Yards down there. So yeah, that was a pretty extensive following. And, you know, I'm really not sure, you know, what happens with the A's at this point, whether they move to Vegas, whether they move somewhere else. You know, I mean, I think for them, and most people don't really even talk about it much, but I think if they do, if baseball does allow them to move and they go to Vegas, I think it opens a huge expansion market for Major League Baseball to take $2 billion from somebody who'll probably build on the Coliseum site and return baseball ultimately to Oakland. It's just too big a market for them to vacate. And I just don't see them ceding the entire market to the Giants.
Has it ever been any good? I mean, I was going to ask Jim Palmer when he was playing against, you know, Catfish in 73 and 74. And like, I was at the games here and I was a little boy. I was 5 years old. They were the first team I hated, the Oakland A's, right? Because they were great. And they had Reggie and they had Bando and they had Campy and, you know, like all those players, Rudy, all of that. And they were the original sin of Charlie Finley being a cheapskate and trying to sell the players off. And that's probably in the beginning of your career, that the Bowie Kuhn, all that stuff that happened. And I think about Billy Ball. I think about even the Bay the series back in 89, like all of the things that happened. I think they're sort of the Tampa Rays sort of grown up 50 years later, right? Like they were sort of brought out there in the middle of the night by Finley to begin with. And they were always a little bit of a second citizen, even when the Giants couldn't get out of their own way in the 80s.
Well, I mean, comparatively, I mean, as you point out, I mean, the A's in the early 70s won three World Series in a row. I think they're the only other team in baseball history to do that beside the Yankees. When Finley sold off to the Haas family, they built it back up very quickly. And you had, as you said, Billy Ball and Rickey Henderson and Armas and a great pitching staff, and they went to the playoffs. Then went to,
Controversial pitching staff, I might add there, huh?
about controversial. They didn't.
Keough and McCaddy and some of those guys that blew their arms out, man, they may feel differently about things, huh?
I don't know. I've talked to McCaddy about it and wrote a column recently when he was still the Nationals pitching coach. And he said that he never hurt his arm. He said he slipped in a bathroom and hit his elbow on the floor, and that's how he blew out his arm. But yeah, I mean, the A's in 1980 had something like 93 complete games. And I personally sat in on four 14-inning complete games at the Oakland Coliseum. I mean, Billy didn't have a closer, and he didn't care. He was going to blow these guys out. But they were good in 80. They went to the playoffs in the split season in 81, lost to the Yankees in the championship series. Steve Schott and Hoffman bought the team, and you go into the Billy Ball era, and they were constantly in the playoffs and close every year. They were drawing 2.5 million to the Coliseum. At the same time, the Giants had were relocating into the ballpark down on McCovey Cove, and both teams were thriving. So, I mean, I think the whole controversy of the Giants and A's circled around, how and when did the A's cede the Santa Clara County to the Giants and never took it back? And why it happened, and why the Giants were able to block them from moving and building down in San Jose. That's really the crux of the whole story. And the Giants continue to this day to own, under the auspices of Major League Baseball, it's codified in the Major League Agreement that they have the rights to that county. And it's the only one of the split team cities where counties are actually mentioned in the agreement. The other ones, New York, Chicago, LA, they split the counties down the middle, and they have ownership of the entire area. This is
Well,
it,
Angelos just took the television. That was the way to do it here, right?
well, Angelos claimed that he had rights to the Washington area, which he never had. And for whatever reason, Bud kowtowed to him, and they basically gave them the share and running of NASN, which is still a problem now.
Yeah, I was gonna
Now,
say, how did that work out?
yeah. So I mean, but that was the way they justified moving the Expos into the Washington area, even though people in Major League Baseball admitted that Angelos did not have any rights to the Washington area. He just said, "Well, we draw fans from down there." Well, great. I mean, if you had put like a decent team on the field every year in Baltimore, it wouldn't have mattered if there was a team in the Washington area. They just let the team fall apart. And now, after a long last, and once, Showalter left and that bottomed out, now they've gotten through that era and they're starting to come back again by drafting good talent. And they are where they are with a $55 million payroll. I mean, it's incredible. I was doing the math the other day on a Red Sox story, and the Blue Jays, Red Sox, and Yankees have $600 million combined in payroll. The Rays, who are leading division, is $65 million. The Orioles are in second place, $55 million. On that day, like last weekend, the Red Sox were like 28.5 games, out of combined out of first and second place. So I mean, it's like, what happens? How do you justify it? How do you quantify it? It's just, baseball doesn't really play to the amount of money that you spend. It's not going to mean you're going to put the best team on the field and that team is going to win. I mean, and you're seeing it right now where, the Yankees, are starting to come back. The Mets are starting to come back, but struggling. The Padres are third in the league in payroll at $250 million. And they're having a god-awful season so far, and then just lost their TV rights. So I mean, it's like the sports are awash in problems at this point, but I don't remember a time where it wasn't.
And I would say to you, that there've always been problem franchises. I mean, I go back with Oakland to like they were going to move to Denver back in the day, right? So all and the Padres were moving to Washington at that time. They made baseball cards in the 70s with all this stuff. But
Right.
for me, the Oakland thing as the current dumpster fire, I mean, this thing here in Baltimore's been a dumpster fire forever that nobody's even attended to. It was like, we just don't see it. At some point he'll die and we'll figure it out. He's still not dead. They still haven't figured it out. They were so bad so long that they wind up getting Rutschman. They wind up getting these players. And then, and this is where I am at this point, because it's coming back. People are going back to the games. The city has been on the struggle for a long, long time. And people are getting back to, you know, it's afternoon games now. People are coming down. Kids are coming. They did the Baltimore jerseys and the City Connect. They did all of this stuff. But I keep thinking to myself, is this short-lived, right? Like you mentioned the Buck Showalter era. It wasn't that long ago, but they didn't grow through that era. That, you know, once it was over, it bottomed out. Sponsorship, fans, people going to the games, they didn't grow the Oriole brand. It feels like this is a from scratch thing again, where it's Rutschman and Henderson. Like it's a bunch of young guys.
I think the problem during the, you know, the Showalter era was that eventually, you know, Danny and Showalter got to loggerheads and they essentially weren't even talking to each other by the end. And it was like Danny went to Angelo's, he wanted to fire Showalter. They said no. He's under contract, deal with it. They couldn't deal with each other at the end. And when you have that kind of dysfunction, it's going to affect the whole team. It just, and that's what happened. And then once you got through all of that, now you are where you are right now. But I'll tell you the difference between the A's and the Orioles is the fact is that, you know, you still have Camden Yards. And it's like, it's a beautiful ballpark. They've upgraded it. They've spent money on it. When people around the country, destination ballpark, people just still say, you know, I don't know if I either haven't been to Camden Yards for years or I've never been. They still want to go. In Oakland, the Coliseum is a slump. I mean, it really is a slump. I was there last year and, you know, the A's had produced a list of problems in the ballpark and I got the list. I went around the ballpark. And I checked out what they were talking about, and they were right. You know, there's like corroded, corroded, you know, metal on where seats are there, some of their key seats are from the football stadium when the football seats were moved in. There's feral cats. There's possums. There's rats. There's a homeless camp outside the ballpark, or at least there was last year. You know, the food
service. I was there as well. I went for a Pearl Jam concert a year ago this month. It was in May. Yeah. And Pearl Jam played two concerts. The A's were playing the Angels during a game, and there couldn't have been 2,000 people there. You know, like, that you wouldn't have known the game was going. It was an afternoon game. It had no sound to it. And I would say to the Baltimore people, and I've written about this when I did my 30 ballparks back in 15, I love the old Coliseum because it reminds me of Memorial Stadium, like in a time capsule way. It smells like Memorial Stadium when you walk in it. And I think to myself, holy hell, if we were still playing games in Memorial Stadium, how bad would it smell? How many feral cats would be like there's only so much life in a stadium that was built 70 years ago.
I don't think that's comparable. I mean, the Memorial was built in the 50s. The Orioles moved there from St. Louis in the mid 50s. You know, you're talking about the A's didn't move to Coliseum until 68. The stadium was built in 66. The only money that Oakland has ever put into that stadium was to bring the Raiders back from Los Angeles.
Al Davis, right?
Yeah, so they built that end of it, and they didn't put one dime into it for baseball since the stadium was built. And whatever beautifications or upgrades have been done by the A's themselves, you know, just to make the ballpark livable. But it's if it once had that kind of, you know, feel to it, it certainly doesn't anymore. And I'm, you know, at the point where here, I'm never going there again. I feel like it's a dangerous place to both watch a game, and it's also a dangerous place to go in and out and leave, especially at night. I mean, I worry going out into the parking lot at night. You know, and if you're a female fan or a sports writer or whatever, you really have to be concerned. Somebody really needs to walk you to your car. And who wants that? You know, the whole Bay Area, we can get into the the massive problems that are going on in San Francisco right now, which, you know, it's extended to Oakland. I mean, we've just gone through a situation here in Arizona where Tempe voters, you know, very smattering of Tempe voters voted down what would have been a generational entertainment complex on a landfill. They actually voted for the landfill. This is how crazy people are. And Oakland, that they didn't get the money together to, you know, build that Howard Terminal when the A's still had the money and we still had the will to do it. They're never going to have another chance. I mean, Oakland, nobody's going to ever put up that money to generate, you know, a economic engine in that kind of way for the city again. And then Vegas doesn't need it. They're just going to slap a stadium if it goes there right in the middle of the strip. And it's just going to cause all kinds of problems ultimately in the strip. So, I mean, these are bad decisions. They're not, the city councils, politicos don't step up. You know, they're afraid of their own jobs. I mean, and to be fair, I mean, when the A's had the money and they were ready to do it, then the pandemic hit and everything came to a complete halt. But, you know, I got to say, I mean, I documented it going back to SHOT. I mean, these guys tried to build the ballpark. You know, it's a huge endeavor. You know, the only thing they never wanted to do was they just always thought the Coliseum land was a lost leader. And nobody ever wanted to build on that land, even though it would have been the easiest place to build a ballpark. They didn't see the future in it and didn't see that area as a 24/7 place where people would come around, you know, 12 months out of the year if baseball wasn't being played. So, you know, maybe that was a lost opportunity. I think that if it ever does, if the A's do move, and like I said, if the baseball uses it in an expansion market, which is a no-brainer, then it's like it's going to go on the Coliseum because that's the easiest place for them to put it. And the A's still own half of it, and the A's still own half of it. So they own half of that real estate, and they'd make money selling it to whoever wanted to do the project. So it's a really complicated, you know, situation. You know, I'm glad I'm not in Major League Baseball trying to decide it.
Well, you say if they stay, to your point, like the stadium, they don't have a place to play. So they've willed themselves out of it. Barry Bloom is our guest.
Well,
he's a Sportico. He's Boomski.
I mean, they have a lease to play at the Coliseum for at least another year. They can play at the Coliseum ad infinitum until something gets built. It's just, okay, at some point, when does Major League Baseball step in and say, you know, this is not a safe place for the players. It's not a safe place for the fans. Like they just did with Milwaukee. They just told the county of Milwaukee, you need to put $400 million into this stadium, which is only 20 years old, to like upgrade it to where it needs to be to continue to have baseball here. They never went to Oakland and said, you know, the Coliseum Commission, you know, the A's, the other group that's involved in this, you know, you need to put X amount of dollars into this, or we're not going to continue playing baseball. We'll move it to San Francisco for a while until you figure it out. So, I mean, they have to figure that out, even for the short term. Some money has to be spent on that if the A's are going to wind up staying in Oakland. And I don't think it's you know, until I see documents sealed and everything, and, you know, Fisher really committing to put some money into Vegas, which he never did in Oakland. I want to see that. And when they do that and they actually announce a deal and Major League Baseball approves a move, then I'll say, okay, the A's are gone from Oakland. But right now, I still think it's far from the truth.
Sometimes I think there's no bottom with any of this stuff. The Montreal thing felt like it went on forever. Meanwhile, the glacial pace that baseball moves at to get the DH to the National League, all of these things, interleague play still feels 5 minutes old and it's 30 years old now. The pace of play and the shift and the runner on second base and these newfangled rules that I'm sure an old guy like you and an old guy like me to get off the lawn, guys, how do we do all this? In my town, at least, over the last 8 weeks since they've – the team has gotten better. The team has blossomed. The one thing that I hear from everyone is we're enjoying the games more. They're starting the games at 6:30 here in April and May. The games are over at 9 o'clock at night. And Baltimore has a reputation like Oakland where you feel like, is it safe to go downtown? I lived downtown for 20 years. I don't want to say it's safe or not safe. I'm saying I've been comfortable with it. I'm comfortable with it getting better. But all that being said, all the conversation around baseball this year, other than the last 20 minutes about Oakland, has been very positive in regard to they finally are trying to make their game better. They're trying to package their game to make it more appealing. I don't love the runner on second base in the 10th inning, but it gets the games over. And if that's ultimately what they're trying to do, the shift thing, the game had gotten crazy with players on one side of the field. It changed the game, but the pitch clock and the pace of play, that's the one thing I can say in all of these years I've known you and doing this, I can say, man, they improved it. Because I can't think of many things they've done over my lifetime to say they've really made it better.
Well, if you go back to the days you're talking about, and you're a lot younger than me, I'm 71, but the pace of the play was like this without all this paraphernalia, and you didn't have to worry about it. It's twofold. I blame the shifts and on the analytics departments. I blame the lollygagging on the mound and around the batter's box purely on the players. I blame the umpires for not, holding up rules that were already on the game that was supposed to, basically marginalize this. And so you had to come to a point where it's like, okay, if you're not going to do it, we're going to have to do it for you. And, really the pace of play at a game and pace of play on television are really two different things. A lot of this was made for television, because the games were just too long. People were not going to watch 3.5 hour games on television. Now, 2.5 on television is reasonable. At the ballpark, it creates maybe a quickness to it. I've heard from fans that, you go for a beer and you miss half the game. There are things that have to accommodate that. So it's a much quicker game. And, to your point about, Camden Yards, I mean, the other facing side of the ballpark, not the harbor side, is a pretty bad area. So, I mean, so you're dealing with a ballpark that was built at a time 25, 30 years ago. You didn't foresee what was going to happen overall to that whole neighborhood. But it's still a gem, and it's still a fun place to go to the ballpark. And I think you're right. I mean, people are happy about shaving a half an hour off the games. I've seen many a game that has gone 2 hours and 45 minutes or 2 hours and 50 minutes that last year would have been 3 hours and 50 minutes. And nobody needs to spend 3 hours and 50 minutes at the ballpark. And to the runner on second base, that was a COVID era safety rule because they didn't want the players on the field any longer than they needed to be. The 7-inning doubleheaders were also instituted that year. That's gone by the wayside. But I think that it's a leftover rule, that's essentially a good one. You don't need games going, regular season games going into the 10th and 11th or 12th inning. It's kind of like the 5-minute 3-on-3 in hockey. Great for the regular season, fun way to end a game. If it's still tied, you go into a shootout. I don't particularly like the shootout. I'd rather see them end the game in overtime, just play it out until it ends. But okay, they don't. Then you go to Stanley Cup playoffs and it's overtime. It's back
All
to the
night.
rules. Right. And the same thing in playoff baseball, the old, extra inning rule comes back into play, and you can play all night because that's the way a regulation baseball game should be played. During 162, no need for it. So I think really, they hit on a good thing. I think, Commissioner Manfred deserves credit for instilling the committee that put all these together. I think it's funny that, my buddy Theo Epstein, and I've known him since he was a kid, is an assistant PR guy for the Padres. I mean, he basically, this is his, most of it was his ideas. And then getting it through the union, what they were going to accept and what they were not going to accept. And then the stacking of the committee through the collective bargaining process that gave the owners more sway. And so, it's,
Make
they're all.
Theo commissioner one day, huh?
I'm sorry.
They'll make Theo commissioner one day?
Maybe, Well, you know, maybe, I don't know, but I don't know
That'd be
about
an
that.
easy pitch to fans that he's looking out for the game. You know, we've been wondering about that for a long, long time, Barry, haven't we? Who's looking
Yeah.
out for the game? Peter Ueberroth was, and they threw him out, right?
Well, Bud, whatever you can say about Bud, Bud was a huge baseball fan, and he looked out for the best interest of the game. When it wasn't looking for the best interests of himself, he looked out for the best interests of the game. And I'm sure Theo, I don't know if Theo wants those headaches, but you know, I give him credit for a lot of this stuff because he and Joe Maddon were the ones that started it. I mean, let's go back to, you know, the Cubs, let's go back to the Red Sox, let's go back to Tampa Bay. They started the shifts. They started a lot, you know, a lot of these things, and they just blew out of proportion. And now you have to bring it back. So I think that's what it's good what happened this year. You know, it's much more enjoyable for me to go to a game and watch the pace.
Barry Bloom is here. He's watched a lot of baseball, as much baseball as anybody we have on the program. You can follow him out of Boomski. He is out in the desert living his best life, watching baseball out on the West Coast and admiring the Orioles from afar. We could sit here and discuss the problems of television, regional run, like all of the problems of baseball. What do you think's good about baseball, Barry? What do you still love about it right now?
I just think that the talent is phenomenal. I mean, you go around the league, up and down rosters. I mean, but even if you look at, you know, Ohtani doing what he's doing and Judge doing what he's doing and all your young players. I mean, the Diamondbacks have a very similar team to the Orioles right now, where, you know, they built through the farm system. They've got a young, fast team. They've got this kid, Corbin Carroll. I mean, if he gets on first base, he's going to wind up on third base. You know,
Well, the
yesterday.
pickoff rules change the speed part of the game. It's like everybody's playing like the 82 Cardinals now, really.
Well, I thought it would have more of a profound effect, but the way they adjusted to that was they're just not throwing over to first base anymore. So, I mean, and the catcher throws behind a runner at times. So if you don't throw over to first base, the player can't, you know, can't take advantage of that rule when you get to the third time. I mean, sometimes if you watch it, maybe in the course of a game, you'll get two pickoff throws in the entire game. That's another way the game is really sped up because in the past, when you had four, five, six throws over to first base, okay, enough is enough already. So, yeah, but I think Carroll is about as fast a runner as I've seen in the game since Deion Sanders. And yet, yesterday, you know, he walked, stole second, stole third, and scored on a sacrifice fly. I love, you know, the fact is that I laugh all the time. Torey Lovello out here, I said, I love that small ball. And he goes, I know you do. And it,
Yeah.
you know, what you play to what you have. Too many times people run teams, whether it's general manager, baseball ops, a manager, they try to do things that are not appropriate for the talent they have. When you play and you're appropriately running the team to the talent, you can have a lot of fun. So, like, you know, the Orioles right now are in second place. The Diamondbacks are in second place. In the, you know, West, you know, the Dodgers are, they're not as powerful as they've been between injuries and all the guys. They let $100 million worth of players go. It's funny, I was watched the Red Sox out here in San Diego and Arizona this last couple of weeks, and there's half the Dodgers are on the Red Sox. You know, it's and I asked Lovello that. I go, what's it like to see half the Dodgers on the Red Sox? He goes, yeah, there's one guy who's still on the Dodgers that I wish was still there. Talking about Mookie Betts. It was a great answer. But, you know, it's like, you know, so, you know, the Dodgers, the Padres are underperforming. The Giants are what they are. And so the Rockies are bad. But, you know, the Diamondbacks could wind up, much like the Orioles, playing for a playoff spot. And, you know, as we saw last year with this new round of playoffs, anything can happen. You win that mini round, even if you have to go on the road, you win it, and then you get into the next round, and you could do damage like the Padres and the Phillies did last year, getting to the NL Championship Series and the Phillies going to the World Series. Nobody expected that. I mean, I saw the Padres in Milwaukee and the Phillies a lot in September and in August, and they were god awful. I'm going, this is a good advertisement for why we shouldn't have expanded playoffs. Then they get in, you know, the Padres get by the Mets, the Phillies get by the Cardinals, the Padres catch the Dodgers flat-footed for the only time in the last 10 years.
That
They're
was
back.
fun, by the way. I'm a closet Padre fan. So like, and especially they stink again this year, and they're never going to really thrill their fans on behalf of the late great Tony Gwynn. But it was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, I'd like to see them win the World Series before I die, but I'm not sure that's going to happen.
I on behalf my Aunt Jane's been dead 20 years, and I still want them to win it for her. Just in her honor. Barry, it's always great talking baseball with you, and I guess we could go on all night about all of these things, and but we will. And the good news is here, and I've said this over and over again, despite being thrown out for 17 years now by the Angelos family after having a press credential for 21, I'm still here doing my thing. It really is nice to have it back. My last name's Aparicio, walking the streets and have people wanting to talk about the damn manager left the pitcher in too long, or why isn't Rutschman playing on day games, and what are they going to do with Cedric Mullins? I'm thinking, I haven't had these they're real baseball conversations and real things you can complain about in the seventh inning about your manager, about a bad play, whatever the kinds of controversies that built my career the first 15 years, but really for the last 20 years have been very difficult to have around here. So the heartbeat's back. Come on back to Baltimore. I get your crab cake, Barry. Come on, man.
Yeah, Baltimore is a historic baseball city, man. Babe Ruth was born there. So, it's like you're going to have a renaissance, and it's great because it's, one of the old-timey cities that should do it.
Come watch Adley Rutschman play. We'll make room for you. Barry Bloom is Boomski. He is out at Sportico. He is covering the game of baseball, and he still likes hockey and bass. He does all of that. So he's old school sports fan like my dad. You can follow him at Boomski, Skie, out on the Twitter thing, and you follow him at Sportico as well. And we will stay in touch with you now that baseball is relevant again. It's great to have you back on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Nestor. Appreciate you having me
All
on.
right, he'll be watching plenty of Orioles baseball now. He took the Padres off the dish. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. Happy spring to everyone. We're gathering this weekend over Costas. We're going to have some crabs. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next week, beginning at Shannon's Pub. We're going to be at Spirits West. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation. I have the funny floppy hat. Go listen to my interview with Clancy, Fancy Clancy Haskett. Been serving beer since 1974 to Orioles fans. That's what you get on the Crab Cake Tour. Stay with us here at Baltimore Positive.